Hello and welcome to the Hypermanic Noise Podcast. This one I recorded a while ago, so it's using my old gear, so the sound quality isn't as good, but it's a really interesting chat. With a mate of mine, Mark Winstanley. Mark is an electric vehicle specialist. He's the former vice chair of the Australian Electric Vehicles Association. He can build anything from an electric car to an electric bike, whatever you want. So we just got right into that topic, the future of electric automobiles in Australia, future of electric aviation, all that sort of shit. Really interesting chat. Ignore the sound quality. It's a lot of fun. So enjoy Mark Winstanley.
Podcast initiation complete. Warning. This episode may cause brain damage. Hypermanic noise.
All right, I'm here with Mark Winstanley, and Mark is an electrical engineer, specialist in electrical vehicles, and a guy I met, when did I meet you? Must have been 2 years ago now.
Yeah, something like that, I think.
Yeah, and I came down looking for an electric bike and thought it was just some bloke selling his old bike, and then walked in and was like, Jesus Christ, what can't you build? So, I thought it's time for us to have a chat and let people know about your experience in this industry. You were formerly the vice chair of the Australian Electrical Vehicles Association. Sort of, we'll have a chat about what that's about and, you know, some of the jobs you've done as far as your business and working at the university. How did you get involved in, I mean, obviously, did you start with a trade and then progress to study or?
Yeah, I think I started off normal and progressed to being a nerd right out the box. Mm-hmm. So when I was at school, I had a superb teacher who taught physics. I had a superb teacher who taught computers, which was a real modern invention at the time. The ZX81 had just come out.
I didn't even know what that is.
It's a superb computer that did everything it needed to with a couple of K of memory.
All right.
That wouldn't even make a dot on the screen now Windows has got involved. Because Windows has eliminated the need for a small amount of memory. Now you need the whole universe of memory to run Windows.
Okay.
Anyway, that's the story. So I started off, great teacher of physics, Mr. Forden, great teacher in computers, Mr. Smith, and I had this feeling for logic, and it just progressed from there. So I just got into it. Then I got an apprenticeship. I did instrumentation and control and apprenticeship, and downhill from there on, nerd, complete nerd, electrical, electronics, instrumentation, just techie nerd.
So how did you get into the electrical vehicles side of it?
I'd always done when I finished my apprenticeship and I'd done some time with the company. I ended up doing I dropped my pure trade and I went doing diagnostics on cars, and then it just rolled on from that. So I was doing diagnostics on cars. The next thing I was doing everything on cars, from mechanical all the way through, you know, stripping engines, all the rest of it, because people come up and say, oh, you know, I've been told there's something wrong with the engine, it's electronic, and it always turned out to be mechanical, back to mechanical. But I realised that the electronic world was looking at everything that's happening. And then I basically ended up doing, so I did cars then, I came back over to Australia, and so I finished up the car business doing, you know, mobile repairs, and I started doing mechanical stuff here. And then I ended up at the uni by pure chance, because my wife said, you can't take that job. You can't take that job at the uni. I was like, oh, God. I'm going to go for the interview anyway. And they offered me a job, 10 grand more, doing prototype and electronic repairs at the university.
Yeah.
And as well as that, I did the electric vehicles, electronics. So it was just because people would say to me, can you fix this?
Yeah.
And I'd say, yeah.
Cool.
Of course I can. It doesn't matter that it's, you know, got wheels on, or it's a stationary object or whatever. If it's connected to electronics and electrical and all that, yeah, I can fix it.
Mm-hmm. So when did you start? I mean, Did you start off with the electric bikes as far as your side of it with Direct Technical Services and your business?
No, I think I was teaching first.
Okay.
I was teaching, but I got disheartened because I expected everybody to want to logically think like me.
Yeah.
That's all right if you've got enthusiasm, even if you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you've not got enthusiasm for it and you can't do it,
yeah,
it's a complete nightmare for the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
It's a head fuck.
Mm. Because well, yeah,
you're just not listening.
Mm. You know? I work at a high school. Yeah, I understand. Right. Fucking assholes. So, I mean, was it a case of, you know, people would bring you an electric motorbike or an electric bike or something to fix, and then you thought, well, I can build this from the ground up?
Yeah, I think what they came to me and said, you know, I've got this fault on this piece of equipment. It wasn't necessarily a bike, but the bike that came up because, you know, I love bikes right from the start of being a kid. One of the first things I remember is my brother, who's deceased now, but my brother basically, I got on his bike that was too big for me. I rolled down the road and then it was his bike, so he pulled me off it and beat me up.
Okay. Yeah,
So
a happy memory.
It's a happy memory. You know, but I love bikes. I've always been on bikes all my life. You know, I've raced motorbikes, you know, I've had chicks on bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been bikes.
Yeah.
So because it was electric bikes, followed in tune with the bikes, and it, you know, I'm not saying I just do bikes. I do anything, you know. But the bike side of it was always, you know, the thing. I love bikes.
Well, it's a big market at the moment as well. Mm. I mean, it's something that I'm starting to see electric bike magazines and newsagents.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a few years ago, even when I bought mine, it was hard to find information on that sort of stuff. So, I mean, at this point now, you've got more bikes to work on and build than you've got time to do it.
Yeah.
How quickly has that changed from, I mean, at the start, it was kind of a new market and...
Well, because now I'm doing, I do batteries as well. So batteries is a big market now because all the old bikes are now getting, as you know, with your bike, the old bikes now are getting to the point where the 5-6 years old, the batteries want redoing. So I'm repacking batteries. And batteries for me now has become a big market as well as the electric bikes because I can legally do it too.
Okay.
So there's a difference. So you can do it and you can legally do it.
Yeah. So, you know, with legally doing it, I mean, there's obviously a lot more things.
Yeah. You even if you could do it, if you burn somebody's house down, once you've done it, then you know that's not great. But mm-hmm. if you could legally burn somebody's house down,
yeah,
you know, you won't want anybody to come to any harm. But at least you knew that you'd done. You know, you're technically capable to do it. You're doing all the right things. You covered all the bases.
Yeah,
problems can still arise, but
yeah. So in Australia, like, if you've got a Tesla,
yes,
are there charging stations?
So there's charging stations for Teslas. Specifically for Teslas, but there's charging stations that Teslas and other vehicles can use as well. So there's type 1, type 2 charging stations, and there's also the GPO, the standard 15 amp GPO outlet. So it takes a long time to charge, but you can still do it. And in fact, the people have travelled across Australia in the Teslas. And other electric vehicles, and where they couldn't get 32 amp charging, or they couldn't get the fast rapid charge, they've, you know, dropped onto the 15 amp GPO, and you know, use that to get across.
So if you've got an electric vehicle in Perth, how many places have you got that you can charge it up?
Well, you could charge at every single person's house that's got a 15 amp GPO.
Okay.
That to me, there's more flexibility in an electric car charging and refueling it, if you call it fuel, refueling it, than there is the ability to fill your car up with petrol.
Okay.
Because you can go anywhere and charge your car.
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere and put petrol in it.
Yeah, true. And what sort of, I mean, the main vehicle that people talk about is the Tesla.
Mm, very fast.
The Prius, I guess, is a hybrid.
The Prius is a hybrid. it's not a plug-in electric car. It's an electric car that derives power from a small engine, and it tries to run efficiently so that when you come to a set of lights or something like that, the engine cuts off, it runs on electric power up to a set speed, and then when it requires more, the IC engine, so the combustion engine, kicks in and develops power.
So what's the advantage of that over a pure electric car, or is there an advantage or a disadvantage?
The advantage there is you could go as far as the fuel, and you can drive very efficiently, so you reduce the emissions to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
An electric vehicle, a purely electric vehicle, will just run on the electric that's put into the car. So if you charge that from, let's say you had an off-grid power supply and you charge your car from that, then basically, apart from the emissions that were emitted when the solar panels were made and things like that and the batteries, then it would be completely emission-free. So, you know, we don't all live in a perfect world. And I think the plug-in electric hybrid is probably the one that's, you know, destined to be brought faster into production, because the plug-in gives you the ability to run on the battery if you don't cane it. Run the battery for as long as you can. And that will probably cover most people's journeys in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
And then should they want to either flog the foot down, or they want to go on a longer drive, then they've got the internal combustion engine with it as well. So that's a plug-in electric hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
But soon enough, battery energy density has already moved forward, and it will move forward further. I mean, you've already sampled the next generation of batteries, which I use now, which is lithium polymer.
Mm-hmm.
It's 25% more energy dense than the lithium ion that's in the Tesla.
Yeah,
but it has to be managed in a good way. And hopefully I put all the good management in your pack.
Well, I've found it really good. I mean, it's leaps and bounds. I mean, obviously, my missus has got the shitty lead acid battery.
Yeah.
And I've gone from, was it lithium ion to lithium polymer?
Yeah.
And just as far as efficiency with that, you know, and I've still got a cheap hub on my bike. It's not exactly a flash setup, but what I'm getting out of it, just in the difference in changing the battery, is crazy.
Yeah,
it's a huge difference. So, where do you think it's going? I mean, there's a lot of countries that are now committing to banning combustion engines.
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah. It basically, we have to go that way. Like, environmentally, you know, as much as the planet will go on without the human race, definitely will. Probably still be flies about, but beyond the human race, the Earth will keep going.
Yeah,
we can't live in any other place than a suitable environment. Yeah. So the air we breathe and all the rest of it is crucial, and that's what is getting missed, I think, by the whole global warming thing.
Mm.
I think you have to come back to, where can you live? If you don't live in a bubble, I mean, you won't need a car.
Yeah.
If you don't live in the bubble, then, you know, you need an environment to live in. So where is it going to be? And unfortunately, at the moment, we only know of one.
Yeah.
You know.
I've heard that somebody say in an interview before about the environmental impact of actually creating the battery in the first place.
Sure. Well, so there's energy use and you know, there's... Let's talk initially about the problems with the environment. So the problems right now with the environment, if we look at global warming, there is an increase in temperature, blah, blah, blah. No matter whatever anybody says, the facts are out there.
Yeah.
The CO2 emissions aren't just it. As we progress further, methane will be the key, because more methane will get released as the temperature gets warmer.
Yeah.
So, but at the minute, whenever you make anything, there's a committed amount of emissions going to the atmosphere because you're making something.
Yeah.
Lithium batteries can have some environmental damage, but they are a lot less damaging than the old batteries, making the old batteries. They're easily you know, can put them through a recycle stream. And there are companies at the moment building up to try and grab the products from batteries, from lithium batteries. Lithium batteries, I think, will be the key for the next 10 to 15 years. They'll be the moving forward. And it does, no matter what you do, you know, if you drink a bottle of beer like we're doing, you are emitting carbon no matter what, because there's the glass, there's the labels, there's the transport, you know, making the whole product is everything you do, no matter what you do.
Well, I mean, with a general combustion engine, it might have less environmental impact in creating it, but every time you drive it, you're undoing.
Yeah,
I mean, I've heard that argument about, oh, the lithium batteries cause so much damage in the creation, but you can't. I just don't understand how driving a normal combustion engine for 20 years or until, you know, you pass it on and then the next person has it and then it eventually dies 20 years later. Surely the environmental impact there is far greater. It's just got to be.
I reckon I would probably be one of the best internal combustion drivers these days because I don't do any servicing.
Okay.
I just wait for it to just quit.
Yeah.
And the Ford quit pretty quick. And let's face it, if you keep doing oil changes, you know, an oil and filter change, an air filter change, it's continuously using up
resources.
Resources, and all those resources have to be made. The battery, you've got one battery, one charge plug it in, just keep recharging. You'll notice this. Could you imagine if you'd have had your bike with a little, let's just say a little 50cc or 30cc, whatever, internal combustion engine, how much fuel you would have put in your bike,
oil,
and all the rest of it, which you've not done. You've just charged it up, just plugged it in, charged it up. You know, there's a need and necessity as we feel to have things. You know, and one of the biggest things that we all have, I reckon, is a mobile phone. In the mobile phone is a lithium battery.
Yeah, exactly.
You sleep with it, blah, all the rest of it, you know. You plug it in, people have got used to charging it. People will get used to charging cars and they will forget about filling them with fuel.
The thing I found interesting is I heard the argument that they'll be more dangerous because you can't hear them. Well, why not just look before you walk on the fucking road?
I basically have started, I teach my children, look both ways before you cross the road, but remember, we're going to have electric cars and you're not going to hear them. So stop, look, and listen won't apply anymore. You're going to have to stop, really look. Don't bother about listening across the road.
Yeah, exactly. So I've never actually heard an electric car operate aside from online.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as acceleration, all that sort of thing, how does it compare to your general run-of-the-mill
vehicle? An IC engine. When you rev a car, you rev the engine to a point where it produces power. If that power is the same or more than the stall, then it will drive forward. So, but you have to get the mechanical device into the area where it's going to produce the power. So you've got to, you know, increase the revs. Sounds crazy the way I'm explaining it, but If that means that that engine always has to be running. You can't make an engine drive if it's not running. So with a motor, you don't have to have it running. So the answer to the first bit of the question was, what's it sound like when you drive an electric car? Is, well, if you stopped, it doesn't sound like anything. It just sounds like stopped. You know, there's no noise.
There's nothing happening.
Nothing's happening. It doesn't need to. You can freewheel the motor, you've got a gearbox, you can freewheel it to run your aircon, say, but you just don't need it because the whole space in the front of your legs where you've got an IC engine running is warm. When you've got an electric motor, the motor gets warm. You know, I agree with that, but you can. I've got my direct drive, my aircon from the back of the motor. And all that happens is, when I'm running, if I want aircon, I press the button, the aircon comes out. But when I come to a standstill, I don't need all that aircon because I've not got a massive, massive metal piece at the front that's heating up continuously.
Like having a fireplace.
Yeah, right at your legs. Feet, yeah. Stoking your legs on.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it sounds like at zero it sounds like nothing.
Mm-hmm.
When you accelerate, it sounds brilliant. But because you're accelerating without this thing going, you're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we've done all that.
Mm-hmm.
We've moved forward. It just sounds like that's it.
I love that idea because I in Queensland we call them Bevans, the dickheads that have got a 1997 Holden that they earn $25,000 a year, but they spend $45,000 a year on their dicky car.
Cool.
And those people give me the shits, and I can't wait for cars that I don't have to listen to.
Yeah, well, listening. I mean, I used to think V8 sounded great, and they do. Let's face it. But and the smoothest engine running is a straight six.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can make all of them sound really nice if you want to. But you know, how about a car that goes somewhere that when you've turned it off, the noise off, it's still capable of pushing you back in the seat. I mean, the electric cars, the Tesla is the fastest production car available, but that's not as fast as it can go. That's what they've put it, so your granny can drive it every day. Your hoon can stick his foot down and drive it every day.
Mm-hmm.
To take an IC engine and make it twice as powerful, you would need to basically strip it down, blueprint it, run it on alcohol, make it absolutely the dog's bollocks of an engine that would be very fragile.
Mm-hmm.
With an electric motor, all you do is just put a different controller on it. Yeah. So you get the same, as long as you monitor the heat on the motor, you can double the power, you can treble the power, you can 5 times the power, you can 10 times the power. As long as everything else can mechanically stand up to it and you monitor the heat, you can do it. And you've got the available power from the pack, it'll do it. So you've got this ability to go from a standard car to something that's almost pulling the front wheels off the deck.
Yeah.
Right? With not much modification. Probably put thicker wires in. Right. Thicker cabling.
Yeah.
And it'll do it.
Has the legislation caught up to that?
No, I don't think it will ever. It'll go beyond legislation for a time, and then we'll just have autonomous cars. Then. Okay. So basically, you'll have no driver. Every car will talk to each other. No more crashes. Blind people can order a car that comes up, and they don't have to put up with a taxi driver.
Yeah,
you know the world basically is about to change, and it's changing much faster than I thought it would change.
Mm.
So I think 20, I like to say 2025, I think you'll be already be seeing the first, if not fleets of autonomous, and think by 2030, it'll all be electric, pretty much all autonomous vehicles.
I've actually seen one of the test vehicles, and it's like a tiny bus just driving around, an autonomous vehicle in Perth.
Yeah.
I thought, shit, are we there already?
Yeah.
It's
We've got the power in the computer. So let's zip back to ZX81.
Mm-hmm.
ZX81 was 2K or 4K, and then it became 4K, something like that. So, and I programmed first, sat at home doing machine code on a 16K machine. 16K. So most...
So 16,000 bit.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So that's... Most computers now have like a, you know, 4 gig of RAM.
Yeah.
This was 16K.
Jesus.
So it's just unreal how far we've moved. And that's what's making the autonomous vehicle possible, because the size of memory and the speed of the operating speeds are huge.
Yeah.
So you can do lightning fast calculations, and you basically can react to things in nanoseconds, you know, much quicker than a human.
Mm. Well, if you've ever driven behind a 70-year-old lady,
mm.
the reaction speed is, they don't realize that they're about to get hit until they've pulled in their driveway.
Yeah, I'm going go. It's green, that means go. I'm already talking about it, and we've not gone over the white line yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it, that does my head in.
Mm.
It's funny that my initial thought to driverless cars was, oh shit, that's terrifying.
Mm.
But you've only got to drive on the road for a day.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but
no.
My thoughts are, I've got a family and I'm scared to death of my young son.
Because
He's going to be the first one who'll be driving. I'm scared to death of him going out driving. And I think, although I could take him down the track and teach him how to drive and all that, I'd like it so he actually never has to drive. If it's got to that point where it's autonomous and I can just buy him his first autonomous car, put him in it, it's got airbags all around and it's safe. I think, well, brilliant.
The problem is you don't have to, it's not him you've got to worry about.
No, it is. It's everybody else's car needs to be the same. You know, that would be the ideal scenario where he gets in the car and everybody else has got an autonomous car.
Well, I mean, there's twice in my life, and I've been driving for 15, 16 years. Twice that I've been in danger due to me, and I wouldn't be able to count how many times I've been in danger due to some fucker.
Oh yeah, a crazy day in Perth. I talk you through a crazy day in Perth. It won't be a minute. So sets out in the morning to go fly an electric plane, and that's one of the other reasons I started electric is, especially with polymer, I started dealing with radio controlled flying, which is one of the hardest things I ever did to learn. I'm hoping piano is going to be a little bit easier because I intend to learn that eventually. So RC flying was hard. Learned it. On my way to the flying field. So I'd just come out of Perth off Charles Street and you go through to the flying area beyond that. And somebody mounts the curb, runs along the curb for a spell, say 10 metres, then comes back off the curb. I'm like, what the fuck? What the fuck are you doing? Anyway, gets to flying, goes flying. Driving back on the freeway, once I'd been flying, a guy drives into me wing mirror on the side, not looking over his shoulder, on the left-hand side of the car, clocks me wing mirror, and like doesn't even acknowledge that he's done it. So I basically gets to the mother-in-law's from that, thinking this is a bit of a weird day, isn't it? So I leaves mother-in-law's, drives up the hill, comes to the junction, and a woman runs up my ass. So, you know, they come in threes. Perth's day out of driving is... I don't know what's going on. I don't know whether it's the whole... I'm not sure it's an Australian thing.
I'm not sure if it's a Perth thing. For that.
I don't know whether it's a mild, warm day or something in Perth. But I don't know what it is. But it just... I get in the car and I just think, shit, I wish that I had that camera set up in my car. But it's most days.
I think you need a lobotomy to get a license here, quite frankly. It's fun. And the moment water hits the road.
Yeah.
I actually nearly hit a pole the other day because I went around a corner too quickly in the wet. And I was just so angry at myself. But there's people that do that a few times a week.
I think when it rains in Perth, you need to get cozier with something else.
Yeah.
So somebody else comes close to you and they're like, your braking distance was marginal before and now you've cut it in half.
Exactly.
You're not going to do it.
Yeah. So have you, I'm studying towards my pilot's license at the moment and something that's coming up these days is electric planes.
Yeah.
How far away do you think we are from that?
Well, energy density has moved forward with... So I just got to explain for a second to give you a bit of a concept. So the energy density of lithium ion and lithium cobalt LiPo, they're actually about the same, but the volumetric amount that you can get in cobalt is not as good. So they're lighter, but the tensor volume tends to be a little bit bigger.
Okay.
So, but the increase in energy density has already allowed electric planes to be, you know, to legally fly.
Mm-hmm.
There are electric planes out there now, completely electric.
Yeah.
And they tend to be of the smaller version. But if we go right back, the Wright brothers, that they basically only flew because they had a powerful enough engine to do basically powered flight.
Yeah.
So they got the engine, they stripped it, they rebuilt it more powerful, they made it lighter. They put it on the plane because flying was already done. The Wright brothers weren't the first people to fly.
Mm.
They just did powered flight.
Yeah.
So we're at that very first stage, but we're at a very rapid uptake stage of it being going from IC to electric. So rapidly we've gone to electric. Rapidly we've got two-seater, four-seater and eight-seater planes that are electric
mm-hmm.
completely. It won't be long before, you know, that you've got big planes carrying a lot of people completely electric.
Yeah.
And I think, so to put a date on it, I would say you'll see the first plane carrying beyond, let's say, 50 people, all right? So the first plane beyond 50 people, I would say 2030, you'd see it.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see it.
Well, I'm flying ultralights, and they've started to, I mean, with ultralights, there's a lot of experimental styles anyway, but there's a lot of interest around the electric side.
Yeah.
And with those sort of planes, because the maximum takeoff weight is 650 kilos, you could potentially...
Not take a fat bird with you.
Yeah, well, you don't do that. You don't want to do that in the first place. Leave her on the ground. I found it interesting because a lot of them will fly.
Yeah.
They'll make it to the thermals.
Yeah.
Then they'll turn it off and basically be a glider, turn it back on and fly home.
Yeah.
So
the big Boeing planes now, the engine characteristics have changed because they've gone to big, big fans.
Yeah.
So they've gone huge fans, lower RPM, which is basically electric.
Okay.
Electric, zero RPM, maximum torque. So you make a massive fan, you turn it slower, loads of thrust at low RPM, you get it up to a nice, easy ticking over amount, and you're away. So electric is actually predisposed to become something that requires lots of torque at low RPM and not really high revving. So it can high rev, but you can do multi-stage as well. So you can do multi-stage motor, so you can a low RPM motor, a high RPM motor, you know, stack them together. And all you do is you just turn in the inside. So you stack one behind the other and you just turn in the shaft.
Okay.
If you're not applying power to it, it doesn't do anything. You know, it doesn't need to.
Yeah, true.
If you can't put energy back into an IC. You know, if you start slowing, decelerating on an IC, the RPM goes up.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to slow down with it. Whereas with electric, you can basically... You can sap all that energy back in. So when you're windmilling an engine, when you're slowing down in the air, you can be windmilling and putting energy back into the pack.
Okay.
You know, so...
Yeah. So how do you think that would work? Would it be the battery packs were put in the wings in place of where the fuel was, or would it be just from an aerodynamic perspective? I know that obviously the amount with lift... There's less drag with the less amount of fuel.
Mm.
The only downside I could see with an electric engine is that the drag wouldn't decrease in that way because it's not losing any weight as it discharges.
Yeah.
So the
prime weight of the initial weight of the structure would include the battery pack.
Yeah.
I mean, look, there's the ability to drop a pack.
Yeah.
So you could almost take off with a pack and drop it.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to. I don't think that's ever going to be an option because things falling out of planes is not really light. But you could. You could get off the deck and drop the pack. We jettison fuel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's happened plenty of times. You know, they take off, they get a problem, they jettison all the fuel over everybody else's washing. And then, you know, and away you go. They land again. So it's not a big deal to jettison something. It just... If you remember the start, the takeoff is the initial high development of power that's needed.
Yeah.
After that, it's pretty cruisy. So you've got drag, you've got your lift, but ultimately you could keep all that weight in. And don't forget, the plane takes off with that weight. Its dead weight takes off with it.
Yeah.
So it can fly along at that weight if required.
Mm-hmm.
As it uses the fuel, I agree it gets lighter, but it could still fly with all that weight.
Yeah. That's interesting. So where do you see, I mean, what do you hope your role, I mean, I know you're trying to push your business of creating, you know, electric bikes, electric motorbikes, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. You know, where would you like to be in 2025 when, you know, would you like to be the guy that's on the billboard selling the new autonomous car?
No, I'd leave that to Elon Musk. I think I'm happy repairing things. I've got too much to do.
Yeah.
You know. And which is nice. You know, having too much work is sort of where you really want to be.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't think I'm going to be selling anything real new. I'm still doing development and I'm still doing prototyping and all that. But no, that's not for me.
Would you be interested in the aviation side of it?
Yeah, I think that's a real. I think it's a big market.
Well, that's for me as somebody that's going for their general aviation license. I want my own plane.
Yeah.
And you can get a combustion engine light plane with two seats, which is enough for me and the missus, for, you know, anywhere between $5,000 and $20,000 if there was an electrical version of it.
Yeah. Would you go flying in a plane that I'd built?
Well, I don't know about that. No, I wouldn't. Yeah. Well, it's just a matter of where the technology's at. If I knew it was going to be as efficient as, you know, as the alternative. But then again... So this is the thing. I think you could frame-wise, and I think you could actually get the plane up in the air and it would be safer and more efficient than the combustion engine because you'd have a lot less weight.
Yeah.
Fuel-wise and just the space of the motor and everything.
There's a lot of redundancy built into planes.
Yeah.
So they have redundant, you know, ignition systems and... So that you've got one and then you can switch over if you've got a problem. So the redundancy around electric vehicles, even though it's a plane, the redundancy around that would be, well, you could have two controllers. And the two controllers, they don't weigh that much. Mm. So your primary motor, okay, you could have primary motor up front, spins a big prop. Let's just say it's a prop propeller plane just to make it easier. Yeah. So you've got primary motor up front and then you could put a secondary behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't weigh anything, but it's just enough to create, you know, enough to get you out of trouble. So you can all those redundancy things that you have in a petrol airplane.
Yeah.
You do all the same with electric.
No, and you obviously you've got the area for the combustion to take place in the first place, and the size, just the weight of the engine itself. Mm. I mean, aerodynamically, there'd be a lot. I think you'd have to sort of play with that a bit.
Yeah.
Just because they've been designed the same way with the same technology for years now.
Mm.
But just from what I've read and seen, you know, and in the ultralight world, the electrics get them up there. They want to go for a joy flight. They turn it off.
Mm.
They ride the thermals. If they need it back on, they kick it back in.
Yeah.
It just seems, provided everything's set up right in the first place, that it seems a lot less problematic.
Yeah. The area to put your batteries is pretty much the same space as the IC engine. So mm-hmm. if you've got, you know, a motor, the space that would have been everything to do with the IC engine would basically be battery.
Yeah.
And then you would put additional batteries elsewhere to, you know, to wait out the plane, correct?
Like where, well, I mean, the way they do that a lot of the time is where the fuel is, in those planes, the fuel's often behind, it's either in the wings or behind the passenger. Yeah, cool. All right. So when are you building me a plane? I've got $40 as a down payment.
Well, build you a small one. You won't be able to get on it. Yeah, I seriously think that it has to happen.
Yeah.
We can't go along. Look, there's 80,000 flights per day, pretty much, every day.
Hmm.
The amount of fuel and the amount of environmental stuff it kicks out, it's just huge.
Well, let's hope that's the way it keeps going. Anyway, man, I've got a segment I like to call Cunty Questions.
Oh, okay.
Cunty Questions.
So I'm going to ask you a few of these before we go, just to see what your thoughts are. They're very serious topics, as you can imagine. Do you think an ability to see farts would help a person?
Might help the blind.
The blind can't see them anyway. Oh, well, it would help the blind. Yeah, I'm with you. they'd be very appreciative of that.
Could they be colour-coded?
I think that's actually a very good point. Yes. I think like a green or a red for a hazardous one. And, you know,
this is a marginally sweet female fart.
Yeah, like a pink. Yeah. I think that'd be good. But then if you went to visit the oldies in an old people's home, you know.
It'd just be like a firewall. You couldn't open the door. Just like a firewall of different colours going down the corridor.
I think we'd see a lot more Hazchem suits. All right, I'll do one more. The best way to break up with someone: take her to dinner and leave without notice and move everything out of the house before she gets home. Replace her birth control with testosterone and break up with her because of her beard. Or an unfortunate car fire.
Oh, this is a multiple choice.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There are three options. So just
go. As long as it's an electric car fire.
No, it can be combustion.
Yeah,
I don't
combustion
care.
On your car fire, I think.
Yeah, all right.
That would do.
Are you convinced that you could get away with it without the police knocking on your door?
No. I wouldn't care about it. if I got to that level, I wouldn't care.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of just, you know, I'm just going to the bathroom and pretending like you're having a great time at dinner and leaving, and then you've got a good half an hour or an hour to get all your shit out of the house. But... I mean, when I think about some of the exes I've had, the car fire is definitely the most appealing.
I think car fire. I'll go with the car fire. Don't worry, because when you're out the room, they're all talking about you anyway.
Yeah, exactly. All right, thanks very much, Mark. It's been good talking to you, man. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm sure everybody listening will enjoy it too.
Cool.
So, Mark's business is called Direct Technical Services. If you're in Australia and Western Australia specifically, I nearly said Pacifically, hit him up, and he can help with anything with a motor. Cool. And power and all of that shit. So thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Hypermanic noise.